At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Go Loud. Go Loud presents Talking Bollocks, proudly supported by FlyFit. With 20 locations nationwide, there's always a FlyFit gym nearby to help you crush your fitness goals. Visit flyfit.ie.
What you waiting for?
What
you backing in? Just a little more.
Episode 192 of the Talking Bollocks podcast brought to you by Go Loud. Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by FlyFit. 20 locations nationwide and from €35 per month. You know what to do. Go on to flyfit.ie and get your membership now.
It's me, COB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by...
The original Real Boys.
Are we just one person, yeah?
We are one entity. Yeah, like 2 minutes in, you're hitting the mic.
Yeah, this thing's swinging at me.
Tell you, Rusty.
So anyways, so here we are with the two boys. And Walsh is here in spirit.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
We actually have a story about him, right? We just want to get it out. I don't know if you are even aware of it, yeah? On the Twitter a few years ago, Walsh...
I only found out about this.
I don't know what it was. I can't even remember, really. But it was like, love what you're doing, lads, but you're after robbing their idea. Because when we broke up, we were going to do a podcast or some shit like that.
Did you even know about this?
Terrence runs our Twitter because you can only sign in on one account. Yeah. So Terrence is the only one on it.
I don't remember.
I was sitting at home and I looked at it and went, what's he bleeding up?
He only filled me in on this yesterday. And I had this in my head. They probably think that was me. So I run the social medias now,
He's after being in his head the whole time.
I don't know if you've seen any of Walsh's tweets, but sometimes he goes in on people.
Oh, not about that to him. Oh, man, Canada, living the life.
Yeah, he's in good spirits, though. We were talking to him the other day and he's
in a good place.
Yeah. Toronto. We were obviously in the studio.
Toronto.
No, he's actually back in Dublin.
Is he?
I've said too much.
Yeah, no, he is. He's back in Dublin at the moment, yeah. So, obviously, we were in a room the other day for the first time in 8 years.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, we've been working on the new music and all, so it was good to get him in, chat to him.
See where his head's at.
Try and turn him back into the music and all.
Back to the dark side.
I'm sure we'll get back into all that, boys. But you said you have a zinger.
Well, right, I'm after being racking my brain all week, lads, for these things.
Stressing over this.
Right? And I'm after being looking at this, and I had this, and then I says it to him. He goes back, says it to his board. It was a religious listener of the podcast. And she says to him, I know they're all after being used.
He said them already. Right? They've all been used.
I'm sitting there going, oh, for fuck's sake. Right? But I'm going to bust one out anyways. Yeah,
I guarantee it's been used.
Yeah, why not? Right? So would you rather... go around whispering for the rest of your life. I go around screaming. Right?
Now, has that been used before?
No.
Right?
No.
So picturing in your head you're at a funeral, but you can only scream. Sorry for your loss.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah? Or even if you whispered sorry for your loss, people are going to get fed up with you real quick. What are you saying? You know what I mean? Yeah. That was me zinger. So your board was wrong, right?
No, that's a great zinger. I like that, but I think in that city people just shout as it is.
We did use this before because we have no choice but to shout. I was saying we go around to screaming all the time anyway.
We get dead for being loud.
And you have to try and tone it down when you're in here as well.
Yeah.
The mics are on and all. You're trying not to talk too loud.
Yeah.
But everything's loud. Like even in the job, like they were only slagging me about that zinger. Because they were like, yeah, well, you go around shouting anyways.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We were down at Electric Picnic a few weeks ago and... We had like all the camper vans together. So we set up a camp in the middle of them all.
Yeah.
And my missus went to bed early. And I went in bed then a few hours later and she goes, the fucking noisy, you're the loudest out of all them and you're sober. And I was like, and what? Like, am I not allowed to have a good time?
That's what it is. That's what I say. I always say to me bored and all, look, it's just passionate.
I'm just a passionate person.
I have one, it's a bit niche.
Go on.
Would you rather digging the jaw off Kelly Harrington or banging the head off PJ Harcourt? You seen that man's head?
A bang off the head.
Bang of the head of PJ. microphone head.
I'd pick anything over digging the jar off Kelly Harkin.
Have you seen PJ's head? Yeah.
PJ's an avid listener as well.
Yeah.
PJ's an avid listener.
He's going to get collared walking down the road now.
Huh?
You're going to get collared by him. But yeah, I agree with you. Anything but a dig in the jar off, Kelly.
Off in a two-time Olympic gold.
Yeah, because you're folding like a pancake.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
He's overthinking it.
Now, I'd still take the smack off, Kelly. Yeah. 100%. I've gotten a bang of the head in the past. I'm taking the punch in the jaw.
Yeah. Oh, stop. How are yous anyways, boys? All good?
All good, yeah.
The new single came out the other day?
Yeah, people are blowing it up, saying it's the comeback and all. Like it's a warm-up kind of tune, just to kind of... A little kind of, hey, we're back. We have a load more in the pipeline lined up.
Yeah.
Bigger and better. But it's just one to kind of let everyone know we're here again.
I'm strung out listening to it, boys. I have to say, I was a big fan years ago. So I was Calvin talking to him. And then this came out the other day. And I was like, what the fuck is this going to be like?
Fucking
class.
Context for the song and all, is that I was kind of not really listening to music the last few years. And then I got back listening to music. And then Ned was sending me a few things that he was doing, So he sent me that. And I was like, fucking hell, that's bleeding. I love that, And it was just something that we wanted to get out, because when we finished it, it was the first one. Like Ned is saying, we've loads more lined up, But we just wanted to get that out, try and get it out of the system. It appealed to me as well. I identified with some of the lyrics that Ned was rapping about in it and all of that stuff. So it was good to get out. And now that we can get that out, like Ned said, and move on to some of the...
I should probably be promoting it, but I'm just excited about what's to come after, 100%,
100%. Definitely.
Yeah, so that's the starter. You're waiting for the main course.
It's the soup.
The appetizer.
Yeah. Who writes the songs, boys? All yous together, isn't
it? Yeah, it's very collective. Yeah. Nine times out of ten, I'll throw an idea out in a demo form. Or sometimes he'll come over with just guitar chords and an idea.
Yeah.
And we just go from there, We're not precious about who does what.
Lyrically, over the years, not just the new song, but over the years, lyrically, they're fucking brilliant. I listen to them going, who the fuck is writing this?
Yeah.
But I think even with if we go back to the first album, you have years to kind of get to that point because you're an unsigned band or whatever. Growing up in our neighbourhood, it was all things that we kind of experienced growing up and kind of trying to put into music form when we were at that point when we started realising, you play guitar, you rap, and
you play ukulele.
You play, he showed up and just
he's
went,
a strange old cat,
he was just like a bad smell with the ukulele in the background, just let him in the band.
He just showed up,
just give him a spot, Jesus.
Showed up with the uke in his hand saying, lads, I'll jump on that, which is, jump in,
the women love him.
Yeah.
The old ukulele.
That man was
the ukulele. He was the sex appeal of the band, wasn't he?
100 million. 100 million.
Fuming. I sing as well. All right, sorry.
They used to be at his man's door and all. Mad stuff.
He'll love listening to all that as well.
He was a lick arse in school if you want to put him down. Yeah.
He was in the same school, was he?
He was a few years older than me.
What
Joey's in Fairview,
Joey's.
Lick arse, right, boys, so what we'll do, because it's 2 years.
Yeah.
What we do, we're all the guests, we go back to the start. But we'll be here all day if the 2 years want to give us a live story. But if you want to give us a brief to the point where he's got to the band.
Yeah,
we go with you first. So where you come
try
from?
And keep it brief,
how are you getting into music?
You're both from the inner city.
Kind of
both have a similar experience. If you want to just tell us what was going to look growing up in the inner city for both of you, because you'll have a similar experience.
From over the bridge.
I was from over the bridge.
He's from the posh end of the inner city.
I don't know how bad the posh end is.
Yeah, well, that's the first time I'm hearing it.
Yeah, I suppose D1 born and bred.
Yeah.
Me personally with the music, I've been doing it a lot longer than the real boys. I think when we kind of signed a record deal, our marketing team were kind of play off the whole kind of overnight success thing. And we played into it because it got us headlines. But the reality is, so I probably put out, the guts of 6 projects on my own solo.
Just
pissing into the wind with them. Some of them actually turned into songs that you heard on the first album. But that was me. And I kind of got this brainstorm one night. Hold on, this fucker next to me he can sing, And he plays guitar, that helps as well. So I invited him down to me ma's gaff. And that's the video you see, Stars Me Eyes.
Brilliant.
That was that organic, At some stage, Walshy popped around for a few beers. and the rest is history.
That's jumping to it as well. Like for we were hanging around years now.
Oh geez, yeah.
Mm. Think back how closed down or something. That was what.
That's our obviously music.
That's what. Not genuinely. Because
what else are we gonna do?
Because normally we'd be out Thursday to Sunday. You know what I mean? And that's all we went to. Like, you know, when we were that age. And then back how closed down, and it was just like I was messing around writing stuff, and obviously he was always doing stuff. So it just happened real organic. Like, I mean, like the word organically gets used a lot in things like this, but it did, like, because we were just jamming, made that song within the hour, threw it up on YouTube. I think YouTube was only starting to bubble at the time. Yeah. Like, and then
he's big on Facebook, remember that?
Yeah. There was no grand plan behind it, you know?
No,
I thought it was going to be like everything else I'd done in the past.
Yeah. There was absolutely
that'll come and go kind of thing.
Yeah. I hope that the lads might hear it.
Yeah.
And that'll be it.
Yeah.
How did you get into music, boys?
You're probably a bit different. He's more.
Yeah, I mean, like, I grew up, like, always wanting to play music, like, always around music. And then I picked up a guitar when I was about 12.
Mm.
I put it down then when I was about 16 and picked it back up then when I was 18. And it was just something that I was obsessed with from that point onwards, you know? And then writing music and singing music. I never knew, like, I could sing or anything like that. You know what I mean? It was more so just doing it because I'd hear a song and I'd want to play it. Like, and I'd practice for hours because, like, I mean, growing up in the flats and Ballybuck, like when you get to a certain age, like, it's either, it's going to be one way or the other. You know what I mean? So I was just playing music and walking. And when I get home from work, I'd pick up the guitar and, it was just one of those things that happened, like, you know what I mean?
I played the guitar, you flew.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Many instruments there, yeah.
I was the same. For me, I entered a poetry competition in school and the deadline was on, like, the class had put the poems in well in advance and Mr. McAvoy, I'll never forget him. Mr. Evoy, Jesus, sorry. Says to me, yeah. I'll never forget him. Mr. Evoy, the English teacher, said to me, you'll be in with a good chance here if you actually put something forward. I was like, fuck that. But on my lunch break, I threw together a yoke. I called it a soldier's ballet. It was kind of a poem about a soldier in 1916. Anyway, long story short, I threw it forward and came second. I was beat by someone else, but that kind of sparked something in me. Started taking English class more seriously. Got deep into the likes of Yeats, Beckett, all that stuff, James Joyce. And then it was Thompson, who actually turned out to be a merch man. When we got on the road, he put me into hip hop. His brother had an NWA CD. Do you remember NWA? Fuck the Police.
How can you forget?
He played me that, and the two worlds just played and collided for me.
Yeah.
It was game set, you know? Started doing my own stuff in my bedroom with a pound shop mic, Windows 95, bugging out. Born in the CDs myself, taking pictures,
remember
putting them on the cover.
Remember your Force Blade little cover that you did?
Streets
in the
of Talking, me and Sean Tracy Flatch, remember them?
Yeah.
Me in a tracksuit on the blower.
Little Mark Echo tracksuit world, trying to look hard.
Little wannabe drug dealer.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how it started for me.
Yeah, class boys. You mentioned there a minute ago about the two roads you can take growing up in the inner city.
Yeah.
As we all know. Do you think music is what kept you away from that? Oh,
100% for me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helped at the time. I still, I don't want to fast forward or jump too much, but then, like, things can change in your life, you know what I mean? But at that particular time, like, it was great to have, like, I was drinking a lot, forced when you start drinking and all. I was just straight in, you know, from the get-go when I was younger. And then the band happens and then it's all, your drinks are for free and all of that stuff.
Mm.
So when the band finished up then, all of that has to go somewhere then, you know what I mean? And it definitely helped me at that time, you know, kind of stay on that road where you kind of go in a good direction, you know what I mean? But then for me, like, in my own,
course, wasn't it?
Yeah, my own personal experience, my own personal story, it didn't stay like that for me, you know what I mean? It's, it definitely went in the other direction eventually, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and we were kind of chatting off a little bit about that, and we will get into that if you're comfortable in the
other. Oh, 100 million percent, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You said that the poetry and the hip hop kind of merged together, and that's what inspired you.
Yeah.
But how did you realise you could sing?
Jeez, I still hear that as well, don't get me wrong, but I just persisted. I couldn't at the start. That's a fact. Even if I can now, I couldn't at the start. But like anything, like, it's practice. Like, my dad used to give me hell. God rest his soul. You know what I mean? He used to give me hell about it. Like, shut that fuck up, you're bleeding.
I always used to love his voice.
Yeah.
It was just 100% fucking raw. It was like listening to gravel, you know?
Yeah.
And in a world of bleeding, popped, polished stuff.
Yeah.
And you have this fella just howling around. And I thought, that's fucking deadly.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's when I started getting a little bit more confidence around it though as well. And then, like, it is one of those things when you start singing and people are paying you or whatever it may be, like, you're starting to make music and go into studios, then you start smelling yourself and all, and like, you get more confident. And for me, it's just now, I've always loved to do it. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
People that even can't sing. I remember you saying on one of the podcasts, if someone's singing around you and they can't sing, you know what I mean?
That's me. I'm like, don't sing.
You know what I mean?
Honestly, I swear to God, if you can't sing, don't sing.
Oh, karaoke is great on a video.
No, it's not, bro.
You know what I mean?
No.
For people that
makes me ears bleed. Don't sing. Do you get me? And I'm very aware that I can't sing. That's why I don't do it. It's not a confidence issue, boys. Trust me.
How do you know if you weren't more confident, you wouldn't be able to grow into it and have a better singing voice?
Well, with a few lessons and all, like.
Well, just... like, better practice.
But that's the thing. Some people definitely can. Like, don't get me wrong. There's other people that just don't have any melody in their vocal cords. Like, do you know what I mean? When you think about the size of your vocal cords, they're only like this half the size of your baby nail. Like, you know. So, some people don't. But I think they should fucking sing louder, in my opinion, because it's beautiful to just enjoy music like that. You know what I mean? The best time I'm singing is when I'm in the shower.
Yeah, and, there you go. Yeah.
100%. Right.
That's a big fuck you to me, isn't it? It's only a bit of karaoke, you relax. Fucking hell. So how did you find out he can sing? How did you find out he can rap? How did this all come about?
He would have been aware of me rapping. Yeah, like I said, right. I was handing out CDs to all the boys and anyone that would listen.
I was using them as coasters.
Yeah.
They were everywhere. They were everywhere. Yes. Coasters, flinging them up against people and all.
The guy thing is, about that full CD, I was down the Five Lamps one day going into the centre, some lad pulled me, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, good friends with him now, but he's approached me and I thought, this fella's going to kick the head off me, and he actually said, I'm at the being locked up in the joy 4 years now, I'm bleeding listening to your CD. It was the first thing I ever met in my ma's bedroom, sounded like dirt, and he was listening to it for 4 years on. He knew the words that better than me.
That's fucking class.
Yeah,
it is
yeah.
Lethal though, like, you know what I mean? Even then, like, making something that someone enjoys. So as if we just make one song and one person likes it, or one person takes something from it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Job
that's,
done.
That's
As if getting 4 years in the joy wasn't bad enough.
Exactly.
That, like, you know what I mean?
That's hard time what he did. You know what I mean? That's hard time.
Oh, I only bring that up because you've done something in the joy, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'd love to do something there. Like Johnny
definitely.
Cash.
Yeah, be dead. Yeah. Like, I remember somebody asking me as well, I won't say his name, but he got out and I was talking to him and he was like, I was listening to you in the joy and all, like, class, love your album and all. Like, would you ever go in and do them? And like, I was deadly serious. I was like,
you can probably be set up with.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do something like that? Like, it's at the end of the day, it's another place where people need you know, something to look forward to as well. Like,
I remember inspiration.
Yeah, I remember it was brilliant for those boys. Yeah,
yeah, nothing more humbling than going in there.
Because
you go in and then you realise, I know him, grew up with him. And I swear to God, you'd be like, me and you were like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you just went that way and you made one decision and I didn't make that decision.
Yeah.
And now you're here and I'm walking out of here.
Goes back to your question about how your pats can.
Yeah. Well, and it's so humbling because it's just one decision.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not as if, like, are you a destined for here? It's like, we both could have been here.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could have the road easy could have been reversed. Do you know what I mean? But we can probably try and get that set up. I can't get
definitely. But it's amazing, boys. Like, we were bleeding shook. We were like, that was like some experience because we went in and we did a park run with them. So it was a 5K run around the jail.
Deadly,
We did that. And then we went in, we just had a chat with them. We just sat down, they were all sitting there and we kind of just had a bit of buzz with them back and forth. Now when I'm walking down the road, I get random fellas just calling me off. He's like, hey, you were lethal in the joy that day. I'm like, nice one,
bro. You have him, so 5K, he's doing 20 plus K a week.
Yeah.
He just runs now.
Flat
every
out,
time we call him, he's running.
They do it every Saturday. They do a few laps around the joint to make 5K.
The park run, the park runs are everywhere as well every Saturday, so they're probably just doing it in that.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So you knew that he could rap. How did you know that he could sing?
That's a great. How did I know?
I tell you, right?
It's probably so, back gap sessions and stuff. Yeah. Would it be?
No, no. But maybe no. It wasn't that. No. It was,
Jesus.
I was jumping.
Sorry, I mentioned it.
Because I was jumping. Because I set the wheels in motion, and I'm taking my bleeding roses today for that. Let me tell you, right? So I rocked up to the gaff. I had the majority of stars of me always hook, kind of penned out. You know what I mean? And I wrote that in December, right? And I came to him in March with that. Right, because we were bored out of the bleeding head. I didn't have the confidence to be coming to him because I knew he was doing a bit, like, you know. So I had that done, and it was majority. We still needed to flesh it out, like, you know. And I busted it out for him. And I don't know, like, if that moment, it was definitely a moment where he turned around and went.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
He definitely went like that. You know, because I remember, like, what?
I knew instantly it was going to work.
Yeah.
But I'd heard your voice long before that.
Yeah, probably, yeah. But that for me, that was the time where you kind of went like that because I was jumping up in pubs and all and doing all that.
And would that have been a gaff party?
Gaff parties, mate.
You know that fella? You know that fella that gets a guitar out at 4 in the morning and this is Wonderwall?
Yeah.
Here he is.
Yeah, don't mind him. Well,
I
probably
and I would have probably been Paolo Nutini.
I definitely would have been Paolo.
Probably would have been Paolo.
Yeah. You were always mad into gaff parties, wasn't it? And there'd be always like 40 or 50 is in them.
Yeah, big party. How do you know who I was?
I was in one before.
Which one? Just give me the location.
That was Calvin's claim to fame before the podcast.
In the Diamond.
In the Diamond.
Right.
Oh, that was Dennis's gaff, wasn't it?
It wasn't his gaff, but he was there. Yeah.
It was gaff
for something. I'm a bit younger than you. And I would have been a lot younger than anyone in the gaff, and I was like, this is mad.
Yeah.
Dennis Morby's a legend. Shout out to Dennis, by the way.
Yeah, he's an absolute. See, Dennis Morby, I love
hilarious
that.
Hilarious fella.
Good lad, I love that
fella. Hilarious. And that's what I remember then. And then like, not long after that, stars in our eyes in the eyes come out. And you were saying about it. Oh yeah, we're doing this with all our mates, and I was like, you have enough people there for a fucking gig.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? That's if they all like it, you're grand. Yeah.
That's what
their
first gig was. What was it? I can't remember the name of the venue.
The Point, wasn't it? It was like, something on Store
Street. Probably about 150 capacity venue.
Yeah,
and I'd say about 140 with the lads.
Yeah.
It was just the north in our city had it. You know what I mean? That was it. Like, rocked up stuff to the.
It was actually like a college joke. So these two fucking college lads put it on. They didn't know what was going on. Yeah. All of us rocking up.
All the boys just coming up. Yeah,
place was nuts.
And I remember as well, so when that came out, is it true he's got the name of the band was from someone's top, wasn't it?
My t-shirt, we'd have a little thing going back to Barcode every week, every Friday, every Tuesday. We'd go up do a little sunbed and buy a new t-shirt out top, man,
and then coke and a slice
pizza slice and a coke. You remember the little Rihanna t-shirts and all out top, man, the chinos?
Never had
one. Probably were the dog's bollocks.
Never had that Rihanna yoke out, me didn't.
But I had one and what was it? It was just like two kind of old school like English gentlemen on it, and I just said above them the original Real Boys and like the organic thing, what it's called, throw it up on YouTube, the original Real Boys stars me US. The rest is history, so there wasn't much talk behind the name. I was a nightmare then when it came to record labels and
people would be like, what's this, a ska band? Do you know what I mean? Like, we'd be doing festivals and all, and
you'd always see a couple of old lads. You'd always have random old lads in the back.
Big
and they'd come up to you afterwards and say, we thought you were bleeding ska, and we're expecting to say, bleeding shite. Lovely.
Stars in My Eyes was the first one you just put out there. What was the response like from that then?
Was
it instant?
Lightning, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was quick. Like, it was like, what's going on here? Like,
woke up the next morning, about like 4,000 or 5,000 views, most I've ever gotten.
Mm.
And then
it just kept going.
Trickled.
Yeah, before you know it, then people are like ringing you or getting in touch with you over mail and Facebook mail or whatever, and saying, "Oh, would you want to do a gig and all that stuff?" Like, obvious, that's what happens when things start to pick up a bit of pace. Like, and. Yeah, it was just really, really quick. Before we knew it, we were on. Like, our tour of our gig was Oxygen's second stage.
Remember Oxygen Festival?
There was like the Vodafone stage, that's what it was called. It was the main stage, and then it was that second stage, and that was like a tour of our gig.
Yeah.
And
we got like 20 guest list passes, which gave them to all the boys.
But like the place, we walked out and we were like, what's going on? One of our mates showed up. Right? It's the only image I have in my head of the day. Like, he's standing there boiled, right? And he has his. He came down, right? We got them passes for the weekend and all, right? But he came down with two pairs of clean socks, right?
That's it.
And a black bag. On
him.
He did two holes in the black bag and put it on him like a bleeding jacket. And he's standing in the middle of the crowd just bleeding. And I just look down and I see him with that yoke and I'm like, what do you even say to that? Like,
how many people was there?
It must have been
it was a couple of things.
In the high end of things, it wasn't huge. Yeah. Like, we went on to do bigger things, but a toad gig. Yeah, it was probably about.
Yeah, but for the start, like, to walk out to a couple of thousand.
It was probably about 8,000.
Like, I was already rattling before, like, you know what I mean? So when I walked out, things quickly change when you get into it, like, but.
Yeah.
I walked out, I was like, Jesus Christ, what's going on?
Yeah, it was a kind of like, downhill moment, you know.
It was probably a bit coarse because you're like, all right, this is it now. Every gig is like this now, is it?
You quickly come down, come back to earth as well. Yeah. Like,
Don't get it twisted. It was a couple of gigs down the country where there was an old man and his dog, you know?
Yeah. 10 people, you know what I mean? But for us, we, like, even them gigs, it didn't matter to us. Like, we were going out and playing with the same energy. Mm. Like, it.
And we're still getting paid.
Especially when we started kind of mastering our craft. Yeah, money bags there. It was all under his mattress for years.
Still is.
But, like, we were still, it didn't matter to us. We wanted to go out and like, when we started mastering the craft of going out and doing live shows, we just wanted to put on a show, whether it be 10 or, you know, a few hundred, or whatever it is, it's the same thing for us, because them 10 people went there.
They got the same energy as fucking 10,000.
Yeah. We were jumping around and leading, but we were just putting the work into to the live show. We weren't standing there going, looks like there's only 10 people here.
So this blows up and you realise it's not a one and done.
Yeah.
And you're like, bollocks, we're going to have to do this again now.
Yeah.
But, like, we were like...
We were walking at this time, but we had a
connection, like, very early on about writing the music. So when the first song blew up, like, we got a few more together quite quickly, and, like, you see it, the next was Live Your Life, I think, and the next
Live Your Life was an old song I'd done 4 or 5 years previous. It didn't sound like what it sounds like now, but it was just an idea.
Same kind of concept, like.
Yeah, like, a record label approaches and says, well, where's the rest? And we don't have any.
Yeah,
so I'm just kind of scrapping these things together, and the lads made them what they were.
Yeah. Again, like, I had the chorus kind of already kind of done, like, because I was writing for a year at least before this kind of happened, because that's when I started really kind of getting into it. And it just happened quickly, like, with the next song and the next song after that. And then, like, they just kept on going, you know what I mean? And then next of all, we're in a studio in London putting the album together, like, you know.
So do you just get a record deal just based off Stars and Eyes straight away? Someone came and said, hey, here's a record deal, give us the songs now.
They were kind of feeling it as well, like, it's even worse. Like, a label's not going to sign you unless the work is practically done. Like, back in the day, they used to have artist development. Won't get too geeky, which is, but they'd actually put a few quid into developing the artist. And but nowadays, you want to be coming with the numbers.
So they were
kind of monitoring their YouTube very closely. And fortunately for us, it was going up, you know.
How many songs did it take for you to actually get a deal then?
We got it quite quick because we were doing showcases and all, like, in the academy for Sony and Universe and all. And I think one of the major labels turned around and says, this won't get out of D1 and all of that stuff. And, like, at that point, we didn't even get, like, if it stays in D1?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're enjoying ourselves here. Like, you know what I mean? And then the label that we eventually signed with came along and they, you know, really were into it and wanted to bring it into a piece of work, a body of work then, you know what I mean? So an album that we could actually put time into, write the rest of it, because we had a good bit of material there from both of us doing it, him doing it for years and me doing it for a year or two prior to that. So we started getting into studios and stuff like that and writing a bit more. But it was first, I'd say, two or three songs, and then it was bam, we were sent over to London. Right, get that together now.
Put yourselves up.
So two lads from the inner city, like, I'm standing there like, what's going on here? I know he was the same, and Walshy as well from the inner city. So three lads from the inner city, and we're like fucking all of a sudden in London, in the same studio that Ed Sheeran did his first few albums in. So, like, we were in the week after Ed did his Plus album, which was his debut album. We had the same producer, like,
following that one up,
like, you know what I mean? So, like, Ed's, like, obviously went on and did what he did, but we were literally like passing, and we, like, hung out with him a load of times because the studio was one of them studios, like, you know what I mean? And we just fucking just went for it, like, just went for it.
See, with the rapping,
yeah,
the inner city accent is so strong in it.
Mm.
did you play up to that on purpose like that, or did you ever have a concern about the rapping, like this inner city strong accent?
It was never, I'd obviously listened to quote unquote Irish hip hop growing up, and a lot of lads were putting the American accent. Never even crossed my mind. You know what I mean? Like, if you get to the base of a hip hop, they'll sound too cheesy, although being yourself, though being real, yeah? So, doing the American accent never crossed my mind. And I love the Dublin accent in music. I say it to this day, and I hear someone, and you know, bands like, I know they're not from Dublin, like Church is from Scotland, you kind of hear whole Scottish accent twinge in, and it happens with Irish accents as well. I just love it. But with the rapping, some songs I listen back to and I hammed her up a bit. Yeah. But no, it wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, I remember that being the first thing that caught me.
Yeah.
Like when I was only a blade teenager when I first heard it.
Yeah.
Hearing that, and I was like, fuck, he fucking sounds like us.
It was polarizing. People either loved it, or like Rob was saying with the labels.
Yeah.
Hated it. You know?
Yeah.
But it was never going to ever, like if there was a proposition there and he said, you know, switch it up.
You would have never.
Not a chance.
Yeah. You made it work in your favour though, because you were able to rhyme words that don't rhyme.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You walk into
100%,
it.
100%, you know, yeah. I mean? I think like, I've never come across, and gone back to being in the studio in London, people come and go. Anyone outside of Ireland has never bad-mouthed it. In fact, they've only bigged her up. They think it's exotic. It's different. We played the likes of, like, their second biggest... Exotic's probably not the right word. No, but going back to, like, their second biggest market outside of Ireland was, like, the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And they loved
that's
it.
True. Yeah, that, no, you're right.
And they loved the Irish rapping, the Dublin accent, yeah?
Yeah.
And any producer we've worked with has said, you need to get to the States. That would sell like hotcakes in the States.
Yeah.
So it's only been Aaron who's either loved it or hated it.
Yeah.
Outside of Dublin, it's not an issue.
Usually how it goes that way, everything.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But he's never wavered once on the accent, like, and for me, that's like, I'm a huge fan of his anyways, like band aside, you know what I mean? So I've always enjoyed listening to his writing and his stuff and poetry and all as well that he's done. Like, so it's never wavered once, but like that, it is going to be, especially in homegrown, polarizing, because people are either going to love it or they're going to hate it. You're not going to go, oh, I kind of like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. I kind of like what they're doing.
I think people look at it as a representation of ourselves. So like you're flying the flag for us. 100%. Don't fucking make a show of us.
People are like, what are you doing?
But like I said earlier on as well, boys, lyrically, the songs are brilliant. And then it's that inner city Dublin accent on top of it. They're kind of like Calvin said, you're rhyming words then with things that kind of sound the inner city.
You know,
like just off the top of the head, like something I know you.
So that's
like a thing that you say in the inner city.
And people like, actually, that kind of sticks out and people remember it. Yeah. So when I'm writing now, I'm consciously trying to come up with, like, at the time, that was just off the dome.
What is the actual lyrics there at the end?
Honored to be, just happy I know you.
He knows.
But I remember hearing that for the first time, boys, and going, fuck me, man.
Yeah.
Like, he sounds like us. This is mad, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would have been like, I'm saying that in a positive way of like, if I was I'd be like hammering down the accent.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And like, this is how we fucking talk.
I'll take note of that now.
There's advice from Terry Flower. So, you're over in London, boys, and that's the first album then you get done over there, is it?
First album's done when, like
it was quick as well. It was 10 songs in 10 days.
10 songs in, like, let's say, best part of 2 weeks, like, you know what I mean? But 10, because we weren't in the studio on the weekends, like, you know what I mean? Mm. So we were over there, I'd say, for about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, and get the album done. And it just, again, with the first album, I don't think we'll ever, like, have that moment again. You know, even though when you're in it, you especially being a younger person, you don't get to acknowledge what a moment it is at that time, you know? So, like, it all happened. Like, it just kept on rolling. Like, we just kept on getting moved to the next place to do the next thing, type thing, you know? And we got a lot of, we had to break down a lot of, I don't want to say stigma, but, you know, radio stations not wanting to play that type of music. And in fairness, I'm proud of Irish music and any act that ever does. Like, but in terms of Irish hip hop, like, the original Real Boys have done a lot in terms of Irish hip hop for what's came next. Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of, and I don't want to sound big headed saying that because that's the furthest thing from what I am, but we had to go through a lot of shit to get radios to play our music. You know what I mean? Or people to to even take notice of the Irish hip hop.
I think that sounds big headed though. Most people as well who've listened to you at the start and that many years ago understand what you did. Like in terms of breaking through that barrier and getting on the radio station. Yeah. I think that's like a fairly obvious thing what you said. I don't even think it's out there.
Yeah, I think what's came in after us as well has been great. It's been unbelievable. Like Irish music is at a place right now that it's phenomenal. Like it's always like Irish music and Irish artists have always been at the top end of the tree, in my opinion, around the world. Like, but like you look at what's happening now, like the Gemma Dunleavy's and all that coming from homegrown
class.
Stuff. It's class. Like it's really fresh. And you look at it and you're like, that's proper Irish or proper Dublin or wherever it may be from. Like, it's great to see.
It's real music from the bedroom, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you can tell this person, it's a passion project, you know what I mean? It's not polished.
No.
Without sounding disrespectful, you know what I mean?
No, of course, but they
manufactured.
Oh, listen, we're in fancy studios nowadays and we're trying to get that sound again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you could bottle that sound,
have that thing where they talk about your first album will always be like, if you have a successful album, you know, it's always the thing that happens and goes places. Mm. And then you have to try and go back in, stuffed back into a studio and then said, right, make us another album. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, and we have stories about our second album. It didn't do as well. And it led us down a road of not, you know, going on to a third album because our heads were gone at that point.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't going to be because of what we did in the lead up to getting into the studio for that second album. We were on tour with the script and all.
Yeah.
So you're watching these lads from Dublin sell out Bleeding Arena. Is like, and when you're on tour with the script like that, Bleeding, lovely lads. And
soundest lads in the industry. Like, hands
down.
You
had Danny in here a few weeks
ago. I know, listen to the poddy. He's great. Like, it's great.
Fucking bang on.
But when you're on the road with people for months, see them for who they are.
Yeah.
And they're the nicest lads you'll never meet.
Genuinely, like, I mean, R.I.P. Mark and all, like, he's an absolute legend of Irish music. But one of the nicest lads you'll ever meet.
There's a man that knows more about hip hop. He schooled me on hip hop.
100%. Like, he used to be coming to us with, you know, demos and all, and saying, what you think of that, like, hip hop? Because he'd be writing them for someone else. And just being on tour with them was mind blowing. But it turns your head because then you're like, I want to try and do that.
Yeah.
You know? That's not who we were. That's not who we are. So, like, the script were the script. You know what I mean? So we were trying to make a sound that couldn't maybe be as big as that. Not like theirs, but, you know, they're selling out arenas. You want to aspire, you know?
And absolutely.
For us, when we went in to do that second album then, we didn't have that same mind frame that we had on the first. Like what you just said.
Yeah.
That bedroom music, that unpolished.
Well, I will say in Borges Defence, the labels had kind of a creative input as well.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, we should have turned around and said, you know, fuck off and let us just make the record.
Yeah.
We were sending them the songs and they were sending them to produce just to tweak them. And we were kind of just laying back and saying, okay, if you think it's going to work, because you know what you're doing, don't you?
Definitely, there's loads of elements going on when you're at that level. Like, there's loads of things. Because, like, record labels are investing a lot of money in make the record. So they wanted to do well. And we had a label that, you know, gave us a lot of time and put a lot of effort into us, and I can't fault that for one second ever. Like, I'll never fault them for one second on that. They were great in that sense, you know. But obviously, it's about capturing it in the moment.
Yeah,
we were in a different moment.
Yours happened just when going viral was just had become a thing. Yeah, you were going viral, and you're like, God, these are viral now. Whereas if you've done what you've done with Stars and Rise now. And you just get the backing with the numbers on social media now, you're coming to a record label with a different mindset. We have his numbers here. We don't need you as much as you would have 12 years ago.
There was kind of a bit of that with the Force album as well. Like, don't get it twisted. There was other acts going to that label, like other musicians I'd know who were approached by that label and didn't have the foot in the door we did because of them numbers. Like, when we sat down to the table, not to get too much into it, but the sign on the dotted line, it was very much on our terms. And that was only because of the numbers we had to back it up.
Yeah.
If we hadn't got them numbers, they'd be telling you to bend over and, you know?
Yeah. But what Calvin, you're spot on, because now, like, acts, they can just go and do their own thing. You know what I mean? And because they're making you know, good money, let's say, off social media or something, they can pay for their own studio sessions.
Yeah.
And it's all on their own terms then, you know what I mean?
But producing songs in their own bedroom. Yeah. And 16 years of age.
And they're like, bangers.
What the fuck? Where did you even learn that?
Bangers. Yeah. Like, and then next of all, they're bleeding millions of streams and you love to see it.
Yeah.
Like, you love
and
to see it.
It's that blade TikTok as well, boys. Like, it's people have that rap.
Tell him about our ages now. He's not into the social media.
I'm not even bleeding on it. Yeah, yeah. Honest with you, I don't be on it at all.
I'm telling him that's what you need to be.
Yeah. Yeah. But there is an act to it. Because I know people who make songs specifically to hear that on TikTok and you see bleeding American people dancing to it and I'm like, what's going on there? How the fuck did you do that?
There's an art to it.
Yeah, but like that's what's, it's an algorithm, it's a formula to follow. Mm-hmm. Get your music out there quicker.
Just a little
more. What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Tell us about when you got that card in the script, boys.
Dream come true.
It was, yeah.
Honestly, like, 100%. I'm the biggest fan of the script.
Yeah.
Like, that probably, before what we were doing, they're the only Irish band that was at that level, that kind of toyed in a bit. I know they didn't go into the, fully lean into rap, but their first album, like, Danny's rapping.
They
before
were
the worst.
They were fresh.
It's been a while since the two of us talked.
Yeah.
That's rap. And I'm like, hearing that on the radio, I'm like, yes, that's how I want to do that. So when them boys tell you to, you know, pack your bag, you're coming on the Rovers. Unbelievable. Game changer, you know?
Yeah, we were like over the moon. Like again, just three lads from the inner city, like, and then we're on tour, like playing the MEN Arena on Paddy's night.
Took us to Australia.
People and all,
yeah.
Going you know to Australia mean? And all. Like,
was it a world tour, things. Yeah?
Huh?
World tour?
Mainly most of Europe, Australia, a bit of Middle East.
No, UK, Europe and Australia, that's where it was.
But it was a good, like, 50-plus dates. Yeah, like, it was intense.
Yeah. It was a slog. Like, it was 3-4 months, but it was unbelievable. Like,
it's probably the highlight of it all for me.
Yeah.
Just getting out of Dublin, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Like, coming back and doing Olympias then, doing our own string of Olympia gigs was sick because we came back in the middle of all that and did our own string of I think we did 4 or 5 in a row. And
yeah,
that was sick. You
literally flew back out the next morning.
Yeah.
Great.
And then we flew back out to Australia. And it wasn't Australia, maybe it was the UK or something. Like, it was all the blade and it was all mashed on.
And he's living the lifestyle then.
Look, you're away with the fairies.
Yeah.
Like you're totally disconnected from reality. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you take us just out of Bladen Town.
Yeah.
And you plop us in Bladen in fucking...
It would go exactly how you'd imagine it to go.
Yeah.
100 million
percent. Remember them gaff parties you were talking about? Yeah. Imagine that on the road.
Like, one of the ones that sticks out on me, the MEN Arena on Paddy's Day, yeah? And it was like, I don't know, 17 to 18,000 people, whatever it is, yeah? And it's Paddy's Day, right? So... The script script headline and we're supporting 2 Irish bands. The gig itself, right? Every gig we did as a support act on the road with them was unbelievable. The fans are incredible, right? Mm. But that particular gig, because it was Paddy's Day and all, there was something different in the air, you know what I mean? And we had an unbelievable gig. The lads smashed it after. Then they had a whole hotel booked out after for the night, and we were on the roof. And a big roof party. And
that's where the story finishes.
Yeah. We won't get too more into it, but I can tell you. It was unbelievable.
Tellies were going out windows.
Yeah.
Jacuzzis were being set alight.
It was special. That is, for me, loads of highlights of the tours. But that particular night, I'll probably never forget, you know what I mean? It was just one of those.
It's because you can't remember the rest of them.
one was...
I have to tell you the story of Viking in Amsterdam.
Oh, this one, yeah. Well, I was going to bust out that story, but go ahead. It doesn't matter who tells it. It's stone mad, right?
We played, what's the name of that arena? Ziggo Dome in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And... just anyone that's not aware, we had a guy on the road, he was a roadie, we called him the Sexy Viking.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, long red hair, big ginger beard, and let's just
an
say
enigma, this fella, an enigma,
a fucking loon. Right, people would come to us and say, I thought you were supposed to be the rock stars. Like, he's working for us and he's just bleeding.
Great guy, right? Great legend, great lad, right? An absolute legend. But like, when you know when people talk about mad bastards, and he's a mad bastard, this fella was mad, and you'll get a sense of it in this story. Go on,
so
please.
We finished the Ziggo Dome and we're buzzing because I think it's like 20,000 capacity, probably the biggest show we played to date
in Europe. Yeah.
And we're leaving the Ziggo Dome to go out on the beers, and next to the arena is like a canal, kind of similar to Crow Park, where you have the canal, and it's middle of December, it's cold anyway, it's frozen over, and our tour manager, who's supposed to be the sensible one, turns around to us and goes, bet you none of you would stand on that. He's gone, he's darting for it. We didn't take the smart option of, you know, walking in and letting it hold his way. Not a skinny young fella either. He went around the other side and dropped 12-foot wall onto the ice, straight in, and he went under. It would have been for about 8 seconds, felt like about 8 minutes. We're rattling on the side. Jesus, he's not going to
Even more context to that. We had a day off after it. It was a day off after the gig, like, right?
That's at the end of me wet.
Yeah. Oh, man. Listen, right? So we go into Amsterdam Central, right? And we're all on the joints, right? And I'm baked, right? I'm absolutely walking around this city like, what the fuck? You know, the lights and all that bleeding, the strobing into, right? And a few of the lads who don't smoke took a load of space cakes and all, right? So we're just rambling around on there. We jump on the train back to the, because it was at Ajax Amsterdam arena. That's where the Ziggo Dome is, right? So we jump back on the train, and I just remember having these ready salted Dorito tortilla chips, right? Now, my mouth is dry at this point, but these are lethal, right? Because I'm boiled to bits, and I get off the train, and whatever happened, we walking back to the thing, and the river, like Ned says, totally frozen over, and this fella, like, words I said, and I'm just standing there. Like, I'm like on a different planet at this stage, right? But I look, I have the angle of him, like, hanging off the bank. And I just, what the fuck's going on? And he just drops, right? And this is pitch dark, by the way, as well, right? So, but there's a street light that's shining in. So you can see the glare of the ice and you can see the bleeding hole, right? He's gone, right? Yeah. Now, I'm standing there, like, I'm like what Ned said, 8 minutes, right? 8 seconds, probably. 10 seconds had to be, but it felt a lot longer. But I haven't missed a tortilla chip.
Yeah.
So I'm still like, what's going on here, lads? And then I start panicking because it starts kicking in. Like, if this fella, like, this is career over now. Like, we're off the road there now. Like, and not to mention, this fella's gone. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He's concerned about the career.
We're used to him doing mad stuff at this point. Like, do you know what I mean? So I'm like, this fella's not long for this world. Like, you know? And he jumps, just he comes out like Sasquatch, out of the water, and like, onto the bleeding bank. And
oh, now all I remember is the tour manager shouting, despair shall wait, despair shall wait. And then one of the lads chipped in, like a sail, like a sail.
And someone says, we threw down something, I don't know, someone took off a jacket, we threw down and we pulled them up, right? And we were only about, I'd say, 2 minute walk back to the tour bus. So we got on the tour bus and we got his clothes on. He's rattling, obviously.
Yeah, he didn't want to go back to the tour bus. Yeah, he wanted to still go out.
He's rattling at this point, right? So, like, he sits down, warming them up. I threw his clothes out on the thing that soaked to throw them outside. We walked outside the next morning, right?
It was 20 minutes later. No. We went back out on the piss. I know what you're going to say. It literally took 20 minutes for that to happen, yeah.
But someone pulled up his jeans and they were frozen in an L shape.
They literally like cardboard. That's how cold it was.
And mad. Absolutely nuts.
And that's the PG story, so.
Yeah.
I love your sexy boy gang. I didn't want
to. I was going to say, is he still alive, boy?
Yeah, I'm still in touch with him. Yeah. At least weekly, send me a picture of a point and try lure me. So his life has panned out well. He bought himself a yacht and he goes up and down the Shannon on the yacht and just lives his life.
Yeah. He's an enigma.
That's a legend. That's why you stopped. You are all worth a fortune, boy.
Boy, bleeding wish.
Boy, yachting and all.
Yeah, you're talking about going on a tour with the script, yeah? He's our best mates with Ed Sheeran in the studio and all together. This is what I'm hearing anyway. Yeah.
But best mates and all, yeah.
When Stars Music came out, what year was that? 2012?
2011.
Might have been March 2011. Yeah. The album came out in 2012, yeah.
June 2012, yeah. Phoenix Park. Swedish House Mafia, Calvin Harris, Tony Tempe, Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg, yeah.
And Newsboys.
Fat Ones, backstage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's all that about?
Baked.
We went back to the studio. We did our set, caught Tiny Tempers and caught Snoop Dogs, and then we had to fly to London and back to the studio. We caught Snoop. You know what I mean? And that's different gravy, like catch Snoop Dogg.
Were you running backstage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ping pong tables and all, yeah.
Yeah, what was he like?
It's just surreal, boys, you know? It's like someone you're bleeding listening to and seeing on the telly growing up, and here you are playing ping pong with him, you know what I mean?
Some
big
joints.
Doobie in his fucking mouth.
Some joints hanging off.
And he's handing it to you. I'm like, no, Toby, don't smoke. So I'm like, no, thanks, Snoop. That fella might.
Yeah, we'll take that off you, Snoop, yeah.
It's him.
Yeah.
Is that the most famous fella he's ever met?
No, we've... knew you'd play
Bono,
this game.
Bono, probably.
Yeah.
He invited us down to a gig. I done some charity work with the bass player, Adam. And they invited us down to a gig in the Tree Arena. And we met them. And then I was in having a burger, in Gourmet Burger, about 3 weeks later. And somebody strolls by the window with an entourage. And a load of, like, it looked like Spanish young ones chasing him. And I went, it's bleeding Bono. He's what? Gives us a wave. What's the story, are we? Probably the biggest one we can think of.
I'm delighted with that. He'll dine out on that one. But yeah, I don't really know. In terms of famous, like, you know, you're not getting much more famous than the likes of Snoop Dogg and Bono.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking
about... It's just in that bracket
50 Cent. There. Yeah. 50 Cent, yeah, Eminem.
Like,
yeah. What, boys, don't be skipping past that. Look.
Yeah, 50 Cent.
50 Cent's one was gas because we were doing a gig down
the
Waterford.
The stuff he had backstage.
We went in and we rallied his dressing room.
His dressing room had like about 30 pair of Air Force Ones. Yeah.
What did we rob out?
There was 14 left when you were
going to leave.
We went in and we were there.
Bringing your man and all. What size is he? I got an Air Force on Christmas.
But he never even used it, I don't think. We were in there before he even arrived.
Where did you say this was?
Waterford.
Waterford Festival.
And we needed a couch in our little chitey dressing room.
Yeah.
So we said, here, there's a lovely one in there. We ran in, two of us picked it up, strolled back in with it. I didn't see him. There was a popcorn machine, a bleeding 60 inch.
When they're at that level, they literally just in on stage and out.
Yeah.
Same
with
Eminem,
seen a few with G Unit and all, like, you know what I mean? But, and same 50 Cent, didn't like meet him or anything, you know what I mean? But,
You got a pair of sliders off Pharrell?
He did actually.
Your dressing rooms were practically in the, give or take, the
that
same room.
That was the
room,
Kanye Pharrell gig, wasn't it?
Kanye gig, yeah. And Walsh is thrown into the shower on his bare feet. And Pharrell pulled him and said, hey, hold on a minute. Threw him a pair of sliders.
Where was this?
Marley Park.
I stuck Kanye Pharrell West. On the phone to me mate. I was on the phone to me mate, right? And Pharrell walks by and I just went, yeah, you wouldn't say hello to me mate there, would you? And he just went, what's up and all? And me mate was like, when he passed the phone back to me, he goes, was that actually Pharrell? I was like, yeah, I don't bleed and believe.
He said, are you for real?
You for real.
Yes.
And Eminem as well. What, you opened by him?
He literally came in on a helicopter.
Yeah.
That was in Belfast or something.
Got to see him within this distance.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That's them boys in that bracket.
Ah, man, he's
Rihanna
next
flew
level.
In. We weren't doing a tea in the park and Rihanna flew in a helicopter as well. Like, you know,
next level. Next when you're at that
we
stage,
were hanging out
you don't be hanging around, you know?
With cold line and all. Rihanna and Snoop Dogg were in the like beside, and yeah, it was just it's
they
mad.
Don't want to know you though, don't you know? Like,
it's just
do you know what?
Could you imagine how many faces they see?
Yeah,
you know what
I mean? That's what I mean.
That's just,
it's like a day in the office, you know.
Yeah.
I found the bigger the celebrities got, the less of an ego there was. Like, right. We've been backstage with bands that were on the same par as us or below us, give or take. And the egos were through the bleeding roof. Mm. You know
that's
what I mean?
The fella who was calling bands below him.
Yeah.
No, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Gauging it, like, you know what I mean? Like, if we're above them on the slot or whatever.
It's numbers, boy.
And they're just looking down the nosey and all. Yeah. And we're like, I don't see any names, but we're like, he'd start with that fella. And the same bands are busking on Graven Street to this day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you meet, like, the script lads. Soundest bastards ever, you know?
Yeah, genuinely.
Just bang on.
Genuinely.
And Pharrell is giving out sliders.
Giving out sliders, you know? You know what I mean?
I would have took them straight on my feet, boys. Barefoot, going in there. Then things were going in. I'd have been standing in the shower with them in my hand. Pharrell's going to give me them. Still have them.
Will we jump in now? You took a break. Oh, you stopped.
Yeah.
Took a break. Some blade break. Yeah. You stopped building.
Long enough, wasn't it?
Yeah, one of them 8-year chats.
Yeah, we were just, got to the stage, we were smashing each other up and nobody messing.
I was going to go, what? This is legal.
Everyone thinks there was more there, yeah?
Battering each other.
No, it was just quite boring, actually. So, I suppose there's a lot to it, isn't there, Bobby?
There's a few moving parts for sure. I moved over to London. I was going out of the board. Like, I was away with the fairies, right, first and foremost. So, but I moved over to London and then it was like the label weren't picking up the new stuff. They kept on telling us to go back and like it just didn't happen. So we decided to call it a day on our terms.
We had a big part to play in that. Yeah. The stuff we were sending was bleeding. Yeah,
we weren't in a good place.
We weren't putting our energy into it.
Like, we weren't in a good place as a band. Do you know what I mean? We weren't making music that we could really say, like, yeah, that's exciting. Mm. Or, like, you know what I mean? Like, we're doing at the moment, like, it's all fresh and it's exciting. Like, we weren't in a good place. And, like, a lot of things happened. Like, and I think we just came to the conclusion that, like, look, we'll just play it and just fucking
call it a day.
Yeah, call it a day.
I had it in my head. I thought, so my old lad passed away. So we were on tour, not to get too much into it, and he took a heart attack. And it was the day after. Sorry, I came off tour, stead in the gaff. He took a tour in the back garden that morning and I was giving him CPR. He came through it, but that kind of shook me a bit, yeah? So when the lads were talking about touring abroad and all, I was like, I don't know if he's going to be around. Mm. So that was in the back of my head. And then what transpired with the band. And then the second time, he dropped dead. And my head, I was just in a hole. And I always kind of took blame because I seen myself as kind of like, we started this, kind of got the boys together in my gaff. And if I was in the right place, I'd have said to the two boys, you know, give your heads a wobble. We'll take 6 months out and we'll get back to it. Mm. But for me, personally speaking, them 6 months turned into 2 or 3 years. I was just in a hole, you know? Mm. And there was no coming out of it.
I remember you wrote a poem about that.
Yeah, done our funeral, will you?
What, it was a day, wasn't it? You called it like a Wednesday or something like that.
Oh, Monday. Monday was the day he passed, yeah.
We put that on the top of a song, didn't we, before, didn't we?
A demo, yeah. Never seen the light of day,
but yeah.
How did you know about that?
You had it on your Facebook.
I would have posted just a poem, yeah.
And I remember reading it being like, fuck me, man. Yeah. Like something to read on your leaving, sir. Like, genuinely, that should be on a curriculum.
When he got up and said that at the funeral, I was like... Because we got to carry his dad's coffin and I was very, very close with his dad, like, you know what I mean? And like, I lost my dad then a few years later, like in different circumstances. But when he said that, when he wrote that poem about his dad, like I was just lit up, like, you know what I mean? I was just fucking blown away by it. Like, yeah. So when you hear it then, when he's saying it for the first time at his dad's funeral, like I was a wreck at my dad's funeral. I couldn't even get up and say a few words, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So to see him do something like that a few years previous, it was an unbelievable moment for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember reading it on your Facebook and being like, fuck me, that's pelt. Yeah. Like, to me, I was like, this is just on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like,
it deserves more than that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Not sound disrespectful, obviously, it's your Facebook sentiment. You wrote, you can post it as much as you want, but I was like, that should be picked up and studied. You know what I mean? Because I remember reading it being like, Jesus.
It was actually, Walshy was hounding me for months afterwards. And again, I'm in a bad place and he was hounding me to pour into a song.
Mm.
And he actually put deadly music to it.
Probably one of that time when we were like messing around with songs, like we were obviously in that place. It was probably one of my favourite songs that we ever did.
Because
Walshy nailed what he had to bring to it and then
hasn't
put the top of that.
Mind.
I'm kind of in a better place now, to be honest with you. Get that post and just repost it.
Yeah.
So it's back relevant again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it was powerful. I remember reading and you were like, I wrote this poem on a Monday.
Yeah.
Oh, it was class.
Yeah. Oh, it was unbelievable.
That's the actual opening night, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember reading.
You have some blade memory.
Because
he knows my words better than me.
No, he's like this with everyone.
No, see, when something connects with me, it connects with me.
Yeah.
I'd be embarrassed sometimes telling people stuff. Because I can be like, oh, Terrence, remember that time your ma bleeding couldn't tie a lace and it was a Tuesday morning?
Yeah.
I'd be like, I should know that detail about someone else's life, but it connected with me for some reason. Do you know what I mean? I remember reading that and being like, Jesus Christ, that's powerful. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. If there's enough demand after this podcast goes out, we'll happily put it out, yeah?
Yeah. No, it was bleeding. It was epic, yeah?
Appreciate
it. So, where were we at there, boy? Sorry.
The break.
Yeah.
Your father passed.
So, yeah, I'm in a hole for 3 years. Bobby's over in London living the high life.
Bollocks.
Renting out big penthouse apartments and flashing cars.
I was in the bleeding doldrums, as I like to tell you.
Well, here we go.
No, it's just like, I was away with the fairies. Like, I went over to London and I was doing some writing over there now, but like, I was, towards the end of the band, I started, like, I was always heavy drinking when I was on the road and all that, and I always smoked grass and stuff like that, but started using heavier drugs then, you know what I mean? Like, and you know what I mean, sniffing cocaine and all of that stuff. So towards the end of the band, that was creeping into my life, you know what I mean? I was only 26. I was 26 when I tried something other than weed for the first time, you know? And that's how I know I'm an addict now. Do you know what I mean? Because of the work that I've got to do in the last year to know that I can't stop when I start. Like, so it just kept snowballing. And when I moved over to London, it was just, you know, that was the hole that I, and the direction that I was going in. I split up with my board. My dad got sick. Like, I was over there four or five years. My dad got sick. He got diagnosed with lung cancer on the 25th of August. I flew home the next day. He was gone 4 months later. Like, so, like, I was with him every day. But at that time, I was getting further and further into a hole. I was getting further and further into addiction. I was really starting to, you know what I mean? So that's where, like, what happened during my break from the band, really. Like, that's shortening it. Like, a lot of other stuff happened. Like, I was over in London for 4 years. So quite a bit happened over there when I was writing and stuff. But I was slipping in the wrong direction. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You were late enough to be starting as well.
But I had like trauma that you don't like, that you carry with you. And it gets triggered. Like when it gets to the point where you're using every day, it's just to hide how
you
feel.
When you use for the first time and you feel like you're away from that trauma.
It was good to me. Like it was one of those moments where I was like, oh.
Yeah.
It was good to me. And it was grand like for a while, like when you're going out and you're doing it the odd weekend or whatever. But like, when it got to the point of going in that direction, then it just got worse. And a lot more happened after that. That was only, you know, my dad passed away in 2019. Like, so, like, I was his carer then. I was with him every day. So, again, more trauma creeps into your life because you're watching someone that you love just perish in front of you. Like, it's different in different circumstances to Ned's, but it's the same. It's the same loss, you know what I mean? So, same traumatic experience and all of that stuff. And yeah, like for Ned, like he was in one direction for a long time, going in one direction in terms of not being able to pull out of the funk. And I was going deeper into the funk. And while she was off in Toronto living the high life.
Selling NFTs.
Wank, I had it easy, boy.
Yeah, I was talking about penthouses.
He went to NFTs and crypto, and made a bomb on it.
He has a pool, a gym, and a golf simulator in his apartment building over in Toronto.
So anyway, the other fella has the yacht.
The cunt's on the podcast.
Cunt's on the back nine every other weekend.
He's literally sending his pictures today on a golf course.
He got home on Tuesday. He's out on the 18 on the Tuesday, on the Wednesday morning.
Fuck
in semi-retirement.
You're in recovery now.
I'm in recovery now, yeah.
How long?
Since the 1st of October last year.
Brilliant.
So coming up to a year now.
What was it? Was it a hard decision to?
At the point when I made it, no. At the point when I made it, it was definitely time. Like at that point, like last summer was the end of it for me. Like I couldn't stop, and like gambling and all, anything. You
everything
know what I mean?
It was just
everything is wrapped up in a ball, and I couldn't. Yeah, I just had to stop. And when you take ego out of yourself and ask for that help, you know, that's when it starts to change, you know. And I was lucky enough to get into treatment then on the 9th of October. I couldn't get a week together to get in, you know what I mean? So I couldn't stop for a week to get in. So when I got in, you know, I was in there for 5 weeks, and it was game changing, you know what I mean? Because like my daughter is 2.5 now. So, you know, she was a huge part to play, obviously. Like we thought when she came along, things had changed, but it doesn't when you're in addiction anyways. It just doesn't. You need to put the work in.
You might think that something will change.
You need to address it, you know what I mean? You need to properly address it. So when I went in, I put the work in the program, and I've done that ever since. But like, I think most importantly now, how I live my life is in gratitude. And that's what I love about this podcast, is because you've got deep on so many subjects, and like living in gratitude to me is like a superpower, right? Genuinely, because the further in gratitude I am, the more happiness and peace of mind I'll possess. And that's where I'm at today. Like I've gone through that point in time where, you know, life is bad and you don't want to be here anymore. And then you put the work in, and I'm at a point in my life now where I can sit down and have that access to myself with a good friend of mine and be able to be present. Like I used to go around to the studio and want to leave 5 minutes later. Like,
oh, it's night and day, the difference.
I'd be snapping at everyone. And now it's just, I'm in a place of gratitude for that second chance that I'm after getting, you know what I mean? And I love being sober. I love being sober. I like, it's, people think about, oh, you know, in Ireland, like, yeah, oh, why aren't you drinking and all that shit? Why are you drinking? Yeah. You know what I mean? That's my question now. Why are you drinking? Because guess what? I'm waking up fresh in the morning and I'm going for a run and my daughter has my full attention. You know, I'm not kicking her at me on the couch and, oh, will you leave me alone and all that stuff. It's like, it's a different life. I love it. I absolutely love it. And it was time for me. Like, it was my time. Like, you know, it was just, it was just at that point where my life was falling apart and I was hurting so many people in it. Because of my actions. And you don't see that when you're in it either. No. Like, you really don't. You just think you're only affecting yourself. You know what I mean? So when I did go into treatment, and shout out to the Rutland Centre and to anybody that needs that, because that building will always have a close place in my heart, because it really strips you back and lets you see what the root of your problem is and what you actually suffer from. You know what I mean? So I know if I don't do part of my day and make it about recovery, you know, I'm going to be discontent again. You know what I mean? And I'm going to start, you know, I won't be able to sit with my feelings and stuff like that. You know, so
the reason why I even asked you, was it a hard decision? Because like you said, it's when you're in addiction, you don't realise how bad it is.
No, you don't. You've no clue.
And it literally nearly just takes you to hit rock bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
The final straw to be like, right, I fucking need.
But what I learned is rock bottom has another floor or two. Yeah. You know what I mean? The elevator's going down, whether you get off or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you, like, and please God, if I stick to me, you know what I mean, recovery program and all that, and I love it, like I said, I get to meetings and practice the 12 steps every day in my life, but, you know, and the bravery for people that relapse and come back, I have nothing but respect to them people that come back, because it must be a terrifying thing to do. But my point being is that it's there waiting for you. If you want your misery refunded, you can catch it on the way out the door if you want, because it's there waiting for you. That life can be back in a second if you want it, if you don't put the work in, you know what I mean?
Well, congratulations, and what a blatant message to put out there as well. I'm sure there's going to be blatant so many people who's going to listen and relate and understand and hopefully see that there's a chance for them.
Mm, yeah.
It's a reason 100%. Why, like you said, we like to get deep on the podcast.
Yeah.
We really do. Because even for us, that helps in a mad way. Well, I don't want to speak about Calvin, but for me, as someone who's in recovery, just hearing someone reenact the words, sometimes you do get caught up and you're like, oh, what the fuck am I doing this for? What am I missing out on? Sometimes, rarely, I do love being sober, like you said. But then sometimes somebody can say certain words at a certain time, like you just did now. And that just gives me a whole refreshing mindset.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Like you said, gratitude.
That's it. It reminds you. And like we were talking about before we jumped on air, like it's like attraction. Do you know what I mean? That's what it is. That's what like recovery is about. It's attraction. You see somebody, and my life is a 180 from, like, I'm sitting here with Jules now. Like, that never would have happened. Like, the band, like, making music and all, never would have happened, because you don't have that access to yourself any longer. You're not realizing any part of your potential as a person. You know what I mean? Because you're not present in any moment. When I went to Taylor Park with my daughter a few weeks ago, I was just in Taylor Park. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Seeing the smile on her face and all that, like, you know what I mean? So I can't be more grateful than I am now. But
you're living.
You're living, yeah. You're no That's longer existing. Because you're living, existing when you're just existing, and everything is, why me? Or why is this happening to me? But like, I get gratitude now when I can afford to buy a bottle of water. Because there was times when, like, I'd get paid and the missus had asked me to buy a drum of milk the next day, and I wouldn't be able to. And that's the truth of it. Like, that's the honest part of it. And that does stuff to a person's soul. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's gonna break you in
so
many ways.
So many bleeding layers, though. Like, it's not just the mental stuff from it. It's the financial stuff. Well, look, 100%. Nowadays, it's different. Like we're saying, it's fucking gratitude. I'd be saying to Cav, I'd be like, on a holiday now, and I'm away, and I'm like, this is the maddest thing in the world. I can't believe I'm just on a holiday.
Yeah, legal.
And I'm sober. And ignorant in them. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's class.
You know, it's
class.
Crazy. Like, it's the little things. Well, a holiday's kind of a big thing, but it's kind of, you know what I mean? You're present, and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, but that's like getting that from your part. Like, I was listening to an old episode from you, Revolut, it was called, the episode. Great episode,
Feel mad ones,
But like, I took so much inspiration from that episode as well, as long as other ones. Like I was saying, like talking to Oisin that you were talking to, like, that's inspiring stuff to me. You know what I mean? Because it's never too late to get yourself back on the blade and on the tracks. You know what I mean? No matter how far, you can always try and pull it back if you have to want. You know what I mean? You have to want it.
Amen.
No, it's powerful, boys. Fair play to you. Yous are back anyways.
Yeah.
Didn't I see a few years ago you said you were back?
Yeah, so
lockdown.
Yeah, again.
Yeah,
it's
got my
heart
stuck.
Well, I was just because everyone's head was bleeding up the wall with lockdown, I just wanted to make music again.
That was a mad time. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't feel real, does it?
No, it was a think back on that. There's
coppers on every corner, pulling you saying where you're going.
Don't we? We all just like, I'm not getting into it, just forget it.
Yeah, please, God, don't let it happen again in their lifetimes. You know what I mean? Because once is enough,
yeah,
you know, but
just getting there, yeah, like during lockdown, you would have obviously been still in that bad place.
Yeah, we would have been deep in the doldrums down it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, just because I remember trying to get
just reminding them, right?
No,
you were on the floor.
He comes around and goes, oh, here we go, the doldrums again.
Shut up about it. I'm joking. I'd be hounding him to get in the studio, yeah. I think we only put out 4 tunes during the lockdown, but like it was like blading pulling teeth trying to get him in the studio, and he won't mind admitting this. He'd literally walk in the door and I turned the computer on and he'd be looking at his watch.
100%.
He wanted to be out of there. Putting this effort into these songs, and I'm like, what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It didn't help that was lockdown. We kind of built their name on playing live shows.
Yeah.
You know, word of mouth got around, and we couldn't do that during lockdown. So they were literally just songs to kind of, like we said, past the time during a weird time, you know?
Keep you sane.
Keep
you
sane, so much, yeah.
In the insanity that was going on at that time in the world, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was only looking at a video of yours doing a live show. I think it was in the Olympia. It's on YouTube.
It's
a song that you're doing. I think it might have been Stars in My Eyes. But I remember looking at the video, just only a few months ago, and thinking, fuck me, that crowd looked unbelievable, boys.
It was some show.
We were blessed with the fans. I hate calling them fans. It's weird.
Yeah.
Still to this day.
Well, they're paying to bleed.
We're just seeing them as supporters, you know what I mean? We're going to do a day's walk and use a pain their wage.
Yeah.
That's how we looked, you know? So,
yeah.
But
unbelievable.
We got to a certain level. There was just a support.
So I never got to a gig, boys, but you were at gigs.
I've seen you a few times, yeah.
Yeah. Some deadly gigs there.
Yeah.
So I remember looking at the video and just going, what the
fuck? I'm actually remembering now, we went down to Bleeding Bray or something one day. Remember getting the dart down to Bray. Random, and you were on down there under
Canada. Yeah.
The boys are everywhere.
What's that happening here?
Yeah. Do you open your fridge and we pop out?
There was the point in time where you'd open the cooker, the oven door, and we'd shoot out in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
it was nuts. We were bleeding. But the gigs in the Olympia, they were unbelievable, wouldn't
you? It's just
that
venue always has a special place in my heart. It's great to do the 20,000 capacity and tick it off the list. The Olympia is just special, you know? It's like they're on top of you.
You
see everyone's face, even though I'm blind as a bat. You can see everyone's reaction, you know? If the song isn't going too well, you can see it.
You'd be waving at people and they're not even waving.
Ah, boys, I can't see my hand in front of your face.
You'd be like that. What are you doing? They're not even looking at you.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Well, you seem like one down the road when someone beeps in traffic. Is that
an Irish thing or is it an inner city Dublin thing?
I don't know.
I'd never let a bleeding car pass me with a beep without doing that.
Do you know what I mean? He'd be beeping the car in front of him to go and I'd be waving. No, he jammed on.
Somebody coming up to you then, you're an ignorant bastard.
You're afraid of that.
You mentioned Gemma Dunleavy. Yeah, only happened me with her there the other day.
She beeped at you.
She beeped. She goes, "That was me waving at you." I can't. She goes, "Threw her hand up, I thought I waved."
Forgetting themselves.
You
have a couple of new songs. You have one new song.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't want to say a couple of new.
No, no, it's out there.
They're coming.
Yeah,
definitely coming.
Is that gonna do one of them for us?
Absolutely.
Doing anything to be alright. Now we're all fucked up. Swallow pills just trying to feel numb. Tell me when the drugs kick in, 'cause I don't wanna feel nothing.
Through the deepest of courts, when the music hits hard and reality holds its wars.
All I wanna do is get lost, escape from all the lines I've crossed.
Just run away from it all. Getting caught up in the boys will avoid the fall. The beat breaks true, but no DJ's gonna save you on that last sniff or fix your head. And the highs you feel now, they'll be lows in the morning, waking up with the wish you were dead.
We're all fragile, doing anything to be alright. Now we're all fucked up, swallow pills just trying to feel love. We're fragile, never again sleeping up all night. We'll never be enough, swallow pills just trying to feel love.
Sometimes I get vulnerable when I lose me mind. Down the back of the sofa where it's hard to find. I run a night out, a high moment in time. I can't escape what I'm running from and try to unwind. The lights can be kind from the pressure that's still creeping in, deeping in. Don't wanna face the world, so I'm sleeping in, steeped in sin from the mistakes in me past. Cause the regrets weigh heavy when you're blazing a fire. You're having a blast, a fat bag and a nagging. False confidence bragging, it's bubbling with dragging. Your head's banging, you're hanging, holding out for some help. You for your signs with white lines, with hate in yourself. Beat breaks true, but no DJ is gonna save you on that last sniff or fix your head. And them hoods you speak of, they be lows in the morning, waking up with the wish you were dead.
We're all fragile, doing anything to be alright. Now we're all fucked up, swallow pills just trying to feel love. We're fragile, never again sleeping up all night. We'll never be enough, swallow pills just trying to feel love.
Yeah, boys, that's the baddest thing in the fucking world. Wait, did you switch? No, I'm serious, boys. I'm about to get a fright. No, first of all, no, I'm just doing a start. Yeah, 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 I'm not listening to a voice message. I thought that was just a sound check. Yeah, I was giving them hell with sound. Just getting the boys to levels. What? Just make sure they got levels.
Boys, can we do it?
Can we leave this in?
That boy, hang on for a minute.
So, wait, can we just say what happened then? Because we need this in it, boys. Boys, that is the maddest thing in the world. So we're just at the spending, what, an hour and a half of juice just chatting. It was just the boys. Yeah. And I thought you were going to start me shy. Yeah, that was amazing.
I'm literally listening to a voice message and then you started singing. I was like, wait, what?
Ah, boy, serious, I'm joking there, but I did not expect that at all.
Give me my mic back.
I can't say enough good things about that. That is absolutely outrageous, boy, serious.
Appreciate it, boys, nice one.
Fuck me, I'm like a little fanboy. That's amazing, but oh my God, man.
How'd you say how waste someone for 90 minutes then get starstruck?
Mad, isn't it? Because I forgot that they were even singers for me. I was like, I was like, the boys are in. And then Calvin said to me that they were singing. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, this is the original real boys. Oh, stop. That was lethal. That's the first time we ever got starstruck.
Boys, that song is obviously came from a personal place. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. It's actually funny enough. I came up with the kind of, that was like a demo. That I think you touched on it at the start, did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I sent him three songs, two of them are like Real Boy, True and True, and then that third one.
Mm.
And if you hear the production, it's kind of different to what we've ever done. But obviously, the lyrics in it spoke to what Bobby's gone through, you know?
Yeah.
And he got back to me, I didn't. I thought he was going to say the first two, brilliant, Real Boys, and the Fragile one, whatever. He got straight back to me and says, that's the one.
Yeah.
Put that out.
Look, I think for me, I just heard some of the lyrics in it and all. And we got back into the studio and we got to kind of get stuck into it and all. But when Ned like first sent it to me, I was in that place, you know what I mean? Because I came home from treatment in November and I think he sent it to me in the new year and I was in a really good place, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Still in a good place, but like I was just really... A timing was because that song is what sparked this off again for me because
and I think I was never going to send it to him.
Yeah, it's because I still wasn't in that place in musical. I was just happy to be fucking in a good place and there for my daughter and there for my girlfriend Jess and you know finally being able to fucking be in the room when people are there and present, you know. And then when he sent me that, it was like there's something, I believe that everything happens for a reason. Like I'm a firm believer in that. I'm a firm believer in the law of attraction and all of that stuff. Like, so when he sent me that, like it was just timing. You know what I mean? It happened the way it was supposed to happen. And if you put yourself on the path, if you make your actions, put yourself on that path, whatever's on that path is going to come to you. So if you were on a path of, let's say, for addiction or whatever, like I ended up in treatment. Like I walked into a rehabilitation center and went, what the hook's going on here? Because that's the way I was living my life. So I attracted that down the path. So if you put the action in, I'm a firm believer that now that we're back in the studio, it's inevitable that we're going to do a live show. It's inevitable that we're going to get songs out because we're putting that action and effort in again, you know?
Yeah, but it goes back to the stuff you were saying at the start, it's organic.
Yeah.
As in, like, you sitting and go, like, oh, what's trendy? Oh, like, love songs. Let's write a song about a broken heart. Yeah. That's coming from the heart there.
Yeah.
And one thing I remember as well is, so, Stars and Yours is a great tune, but Sunny Days, boys, that song's fucking powerful.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And even the video and all, do you know what I mean? Like, the video was like, oh, that's deadly. But then it's only when you listen to the lyrics, you're like, oh, is it deep? I mean, and
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know that's obviously a personal connection to you.
It was always with that song, like, if I knew the weight that song had to other people who listened to it, people gotten the lyrics tattooed on them, being in floods of tears at gigs. If I'd have known that, I'd tell myself this, I'd have gone back and made my verses better.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, it was just kind of me getting stuff off my chest. And maybe that's what makes the song
I think that is what makes it.
Yeah.
But I always thought, after it was out, it was like, Jesus, like, it's one of their biggest songs. And I was like, oh, I should have done better on them verses.
Yeah.
But maybe it's that kind of, you know, just not trying.
Do you know what it is? It's not a sad song.
No.
It's not a sad song.
It's not. Yeah.
But it has a sad message.
Yeah.
But like, you'd listen to that tune now and be like, we're going on a drive handy.
But I mean, the greatest songs, like in that kind of genre, like if they're supposed to be sad songs, are the ones that are going to lift you up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a point, you know, imagine John Lennon, and there's a point where it shifts in the music. And then all of a sudden, well, for me, speaking for me, I'm lifted. I'm sad and then I'm lifted.
Yeah.
You know, and if a song can do that, then people are going to definitely connect to it. And like you said, it's coming from the heart. And once you stay for experience, stay in that point of coming from the heart and being real. And it's about real. Like, look at you as like, do you know what I mean? Mm. People are enjoy listening to you because there's no airs or graces about you. You know what I mean? These are real. And that's something that people can automatically connect to. And I think with Sunny Days, it was the same with a lot of our earlier stuff as well.
Yeah.
It's a powerful message, but there is humor in the song and the lyrics.
I love that idea of taking something, you know, as deep, like a theme like suicide, and kind of not spinning on its head and making it an upbeat song. If we put out that song and it was sad and dreary and ballady, it wouldn't have the same effect. And the song, it's about my cousin. Yeah. It's not the type of person he was. So he'd have been saying, what the fuck is that you just put out, you know? So the music had to reflect who he was. And then I got a little bit real with the lyrics.
Yeah.
But I love that idea of doing that with songs. And a lot of demos I sent to the boys kind of toy with that back and forth.
In that song though, you're not mourning them, you're remembering them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're sitting around, you're laughing about, remember you serious and knew this, you know what I mean? And you're still remembering who he was, as opposed to me like, oh, he's not here now and it's a sad song and let's all, do you know what I mean? Mourn together.
Naturally, that's a huge part of Irish culture though, isn't it? For us, like growing up, funerals are a celebration.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
don't get me wrong, it's grief at a funeral.
But they're fucking deadly.
Funerals.
They'd be on wheels, the place must be rocking, the guitars come out.
Saxophone players and all to be out there now, boys.
I've seen it,
do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Only shot again, strippers down for a few minutes.
This is what he would have wanted.
Yeah.
You better believe it.
He's here beside us now.
Poor fuming.
What an excuse to go to
another one though, boys, and I remember at the time thinking like, I was young and I was immature and a bit naive, and I remember thinking like, is that a publicity stunt? But is it true? You know your song Blue Eyes?
Yeah.
Is it true you was torn down the opportunity down by Chris Brown?
That was very true.
It's all real,
real. Everything about that was true.
Once he wanted to punch the head up.
he would have gave him, cut him up with elbows. Yeah. Chris Brown would have cut him up with elbows.
But do you want to talk through that? What happened there?
Like the media reported it.
It kind of got blown up, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I can see our single at the time was a song called Blue Eyes. The theme of it was domestic violence. And I don't know from his camp how it happened, but somebody from his camp got in touch with air guys and says, there's a chance to open for him in the Tree Arena there. And it wasn't taken lightly. Like, before we even talked about the whole thing about whatever he'd done in his past, like, we were just thinking from our point of view, that's a big deal to get out in front of X amount of people that early in their career. So it wasn't something we just, like, you know. But then obviously we sat down and talked about it, and we don't stand for that shit.
Yeah, there was always that doubt, like when we got the offer to do it, there was that doubt, like because of what he was accused of doing. And you know what I mean? When you see photos and all that stuff, it was, look, nothing got to do with us in the grand scheme of things, but like we were putting out a song that was about a specific topic that was tied into what he was, you know, involved in or accused of. And then, you know, we were just like, no, we're going to stay true to what, like, message we were putting in the song and the type of men we are. Mm. I think, we were rare boy our mothers, you know what I mean?
I think the bottom line was we went back and forth like this, and the bottom line was, are we comfortable stepping out on the stage to support that guy? And the answer was no. Unanimous.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then the media blew it up, made it what it was, and everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, because I remember thinking that, I'm like, that's a good publicity stunt.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
We did get a lot of media attention of it, but yeah, like he said, it was nothing was planned there.
Yeah.
It was just...
But again, but see, back then, like, I was like about 18 or something. Yeah, I was like, they know what
they're doing. Yeah, we had no clue. Yeah. Like, we
the
had
marketing
no clue.
Team couldn't have come up with something.
No, like they couldn't have. Yeah. It would all happen, like again, go back to just three lads from the flats and down. Like, we had no clue what was going on half the time around us. Like, we were trying to stay sharp and trying to learn as things were going on. But at the same time, like, the sharks are there in any industry.
Yeah.
So when you're going in green, you know, so we had no, like, intention behind anything that we did, like, for something that, like, was calculated.
There was a lot of innocence behind it, you know?
There was a lot, of that.
For the right reason, though.
Yeah, you
know 100%.
I mean? Yeah.
Like, for sure, yeah.
100%.
I'd do it today. Don't even ask me that question, you know what I mean?
Because
I was a boy then. You know, in my early 20s, I'm 35 next month, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, changes the your landscape. I have a daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, again, it goes back to being original, being real, organic. This, and you're like, what kind of message are we fucking sending out? Singing this song about, like, oh, like, this is, here's the story we're painting here. And then be like, oh, but, like, we'll take an opportunity when it comes.
Straight away, it would just come to sellouts, wouldn't it?
You're not thinking about yourself in that moment. Mm. You know what I mean? You're thinking about, like, the greater meaning of the message that you're trying to get across. It's not like, oh, yeah, we can get up there, 12, 13,000 people and a few quid. Or you can just say, no, that's not for us. Thanks very much. And we'll move on to the next one. That's basically what it was, you know?
Mm. For 6 days, you was being true, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, lads, we're at the keeping you long enough.
It's been great to be here.
It's been good crap.
Have you started the plug, boys?
Well,
obviously, the new song, Fragile, is out. Like we said, it's only a warm-up tune. There's much bigger and better stuff to come.
The next song is coming. I don't know, like, we're just going to keep them coming, you know what I mean?
So we're going to drop them out every month after another.
Yeah.
One every month from now until the end of the year and stay in the studio and get the music out there.
Yeah. And then we can't give too much away. We were talking to yourself, Mike, but we've been in meetings today with record labels and music promoters, and, you know, strings are being pulled in the background there, so there might be a couple of announcements coming. Not too soon, so don't be pounding me in the comments.
I'll say end of September, right? So I'll say it, right? I don't care, right? And if they pull don't ring me.
But now, out of the bag.
End of September, we'll be making an announcement around something like, look, we're gonna do gigs, we're gonna get back on the road. People are asking for it, so he's trying to play coy.
He's
there.
Trying to dick you up. Yeah. You're
literally on meetings today. Don't announce anything.
You'll know when
he's not selling out 5 Olympias in 2 minutes.
You'll know when you know what I mean?
EP 2025. There you go. It's already announced.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And before we wrap up. Once again, shout out to FlyFit by sponsoring the podcast. That's 20 locations all over Ireland. And from €35 per month, you can get your membership now on flyfit.ie.
All right, lads. Absolutely brilliant. The song was amazing, by the way, as well. Loving listening to it.
Yeah.
And I'm a big, big fan. The Lions are back, boys, honestly.
Thanks very much.
Very chippy before we go.
Chit.
Yeah. Take us out, Ed.
Boom.
Go Loud presents Talking Bollocks, proudly supported by FlyFit. Smash your fitness goals guided by expert trainers at FlyFit. Visit flyfit.ie to sign up now. Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Cut down.